I call Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Wednesday, April 15th, 2015, Tax Day. Let the record reflect that it is 3:30 p.m. Committee members present, Vice Chair Senator Costello, Senator Stedman, Senator Coghill, and myself, Senator Giesel. I expect Senator Machicki, Stoltz, and Wilikowski to be joining us soon. Recording secretary is Ann. Helping us out on the audio is Alex, and the committee aide is Ike. So today we are going to start out with the resolutions, and we're starting out with Joint Resolution 24. This is offered by Representative Keller. His aide is here, and so I will turn this over to Mr. Jim Pound. Welcome, Mr. Pound.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Jim Pound. I'm staff representative Wes Keller. He apologizes for not being here. However, they're at the other end of the hall, busy working on other projects right at the present time. House Joint Resolution number 24 basically is a kind of gentler version of some language that I think you've already seen this year, having to do with land and the federal government. The whereas in this are basically a history of the land withdrawals that were originally pulled during the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act back in the 70s, essentially using that act and the Alaska National Interest Land Conservation Act down the road later on that authorized the Secretary of the Interior to withdraw and hold more than 150 million acres of land in Alaska for the purposes of studying what to do with the land down the road. Part of that requirement was for a report to be filed with Congress, and as required, that report was filed in 2006. It is known as the Alaska Lands Transfer Acceleration Report, which also became an act in 2007. The report cited that a vast majority of the land that was being withheld had outlived its original purpose, and that 95% of it should be returned to the state. Despite that report, none of that land has been released so far. During that time, the state has been permitted to do some top filing on the land, so whenever it is turned over, there is an option for the state to start working getting that land and take care of it. With the history, that turns over to the resolves. What we are asking the federal government to do is to honor its commitment to Alaska under the statehood, the Alaska Native Claims Settlement, the Cook Inlet Exchange, the Alaska National Interest Conservation, and the Alaska Land Transfer Acceleration Acts, and release approximately 152,181,400 acres of land. The resolution further asks Congress to strongly encourage the Secretary of the Interior to act in that direction. The only stick, so to speak, in this resolution is that if it does suggest to the Attorney General that if the land is not released, that we start seeking legal action. And the final clause basically says who the resolution will go to. And I'm gathering that my lifeline is on phone by now, I hope. Sarah Taylor from the Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Areas is certainly the expert, more so than I am, on this, and she'll be glad, and I will be glad to answer any questions that we can answer.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pound. And yes, Sarah Taylor is on the line. So why don't we turn to Sarah at this time? Ms. Taylor, can you hear us? She's in the off net. Make sure that you're unmuted, Ms. Taylor.
I missed something when I was being unmuted.
Yes, there you go. We can hear you now. If you just wait one second, I just want to recognize that Senator Stoltz has joined us. So, Ms. Taylor, welcome to the committee. We are interested in your comments on HJR 24.
Oh, certainly. Through the chair, Sarah Taylor with the Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Areas. Resolution is a long time coming. I've been working on D1 withdrawal issues for about the last 12 years. My second day on the job with DNR, I remember asking someone, why are we still waiting for our land? Because at that time, we had about 11 million acres left. I said, why are we still waiting for those lands? And someone said, well, because the good stuff is all locked up. And so that interested me, and it kind of culminated in this report in 2006 when I remember reviewing this report, and it was wonderful because the BLM Alaska region recognized that the D1 withdrawals, now these D1 withdrawals, this is referring to a Section 17D1 in the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act that withdrew lands for purposes that no longer exist, probably the most prominent of those being the lands that were withdrawn for designation under the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act. And all of those withdrawals are still on the books even 34 years later after ANILCA was passed. And there are a number of withdrawals also for the pipeline corridor, for a number of other things, and the 2006 report from BLM recognized that the withdrawals, the reasons for those withdrawals, were no longer an issue, and that the release of 151 million acres was, you know, consistent with the public interest. And they were going to consider withholding 6 million acres of B1 withdrawals until a more appropriate withdrawal could be put in place over the top of that. Even so, throughout the 2000s, when BLM was going through its planning process, it was recommending in each plan that the D1 withdrawals be lifted. And even with each of those recommendations in the management plan and with the recommendations in the 2006 report, those withdrawals have not been lifted. We have top filings throughout the state over some very prime acreage that is right now sitting under a D1 withdrawal, preventing its transfer to anyone, to the state, to a native corporation, to an individual. And this is a great opportunity to free up the title, clean that up, and start to address, you know, what they'd like to, you know, what withdrawals they would like to hold on to, which they recognize these 6 million acres, and then allow us to receive our entitlement free of this encumbrance. Thank you very much for allowing me to be here today.
Thank you very much, Ms. Taylor. Any questions for Ms. Taylor? Or Mr. Pound. No. Senator Coghill?
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate this. We were delivered one that dealt with lands that we were just going to struggle with constitutionally, but that had a much bigger bite than this. But I think we still need to speak to it. Probably the only negative about this is that we have had so many federal issues that we're dealing with that the resolutions are going out of here at a high rate. And we just need to make sure that if you're going to sponsor them, that you make sure that you ask people, did you get them, did you hear them? I mean, I think those are the things that we're going to have to be more and more responsible for, because we've said so many things. Probably the reason we've said so many things is because there's so many things being done. But on this particular issue, I think I would encourage you to make sure that this gets in the right hands and gets the right attention. So that would be my only counsel, because this is really needed.
Good advice, following up on these issues. Any other comments from committee members? Seeing none, there is no one else online. I will open public testimony. There's no one else online wishing to testify. Is there anyone here in the room wishing to testify on this resolution? Seeing none, I'll close public testimony. Any further discussion? Seeing none. Senator Costello.
Madam Chair, I move House Joint Resolution Number 24, Version 29-LS0843/alpha from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying zero fiscal note.
Is there objection? Seeing none, the committee passes the resolution out.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I call Senate Resources back to order. Our next item of business is Senate Joint Resolution Number 18. And I invite my aide, Kari Knorr, who is sitting at the table. This is Kari's first hearing on a piece of legislation, so please be nice. So, Kari, if you would please introduce Senate Joint Resolution 18 to us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Kari Knorr. I'm staff to Senator Giesel. Before you this afternoon is Senate Joint Resolution 18, which is in support of the Royal Dutch Shell Port of Seattle leases. This resolution also urges the state of Washington to stop interfering with Alaska's economic development, especially when it comes to the development of the oil and gas deposits in the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas, as well as the economic development that would occur in the Arctic region of the state of Alaska. This resolution also offers ports in Seward and or Dutch Harbor as possible ports for Royal Dutch Shell in the event that Seattle and the state of Washington move forward with the termination of the current leases that Royal Dutch Shell currently possesses. And I believe there are some people online who will be testifying as well.
Thank you very much. There are, in fact, two people online. But first, any questions for Kari concerning the resolution? Yes, Senator Stedman.
I'm sure there's several ports that I think Shell's been looking at, two of which are Dutch Harbor, which is quite a ways away from the supply chain, and then Seward, which has some geographical advantages over a lot of other port potentials. But there's also Ketchikan and I think Whittier and Sitka, and they all have different strengths and weaknesses. And I'm just wondering why we picked Dutch Harbor and Seward versus the whole gamut of what they're actually looking at.
Well, Dutch Harbor is actually a location that Shell has harbored their vessels actually last year. They already have some facilities set up for them. And Seward is in the process of developing a harbor, but Ketchikan is certainly an option. I'm not sure Whittier actually would be able to accommodate those drilling vessels, Senator Stedman. But
and if I could, and Sitka has a dock facility that's capable of Panamax size ships. And at some point, Madam Chairman, I think we'll have some discussions here on port development in the state to facilitate the offshore, and it appears that no one port is going to have the capacity, and we'll probably end up with multiple ports trying to facilitate this. So anyway, I just thought I'd mention that because I think Seattle is being extremely rude to the neighbor state to the north, and in particular, if they don't want Shell's business, we certainly do.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Those additional comments. Senator Stoltz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I look at Seward. It's just kind of surprising some of the politics that comes out of Seward and some of their environmental concerns about the, given that Seward has such a rich history in the development of Alaska and coal and many other things. And now they, I've seen expressions that their future is being in the Kenai Fjords National Park, and they're not sure they want to be a development town. And have we actually received any kind of support from the city of Seward for economic development and bringing something as evil as fossil fuels into Seward, because into the national park there? Is it the politics has certainly evolved in my relatively short lifetime. It seems longer every day, but. But Seward is sometimes some pretty goofy things come out of there, and they seem more interested in government and a few industries, but not. There's a lot of antagonism toward coal and internal disputes, and I don't want to endorse somebody that doesn't want this project. And they do love fish, but all kinds of environmentalists like that too.
Thank you for your comment, Senator Stoltz. I will respond as the immediate past senator for Seward. And just let the committee know that actually Seward was the home port for several, at least one, of Shell's vessels. They are developing an industrial harbor across the bay there from the city itself, and actually are quite open to development. But regardless of that, If someone would like to offer an amendment on page 3, line 13, that says has available potential home ports in Alaska or something along those lines, we could certainly entertain that. Senator Stedman.
Yeah, I'd like to go ahead and make a conceptual amendment on line 13 that available potential home ports at Dutch Harbor and then comma Seward, comma Ketchikan, comma Sitka, comma anywhere in Prince William Sound.
Okay.
And just to leave all the options open for the companies to hope for a review of all their options that work with them to select the best alternative.
All right. So is there any objection to that conceptual amendment? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted. Thank you very much, Senator Stedman.
Did I miss a chance for Port McKenzie here?
Yeah, I put that in there. We don't want to impact those fish, though.
All right. If any other further questions, we can go to the folks online who are wishing to testify on the bill. So we'll open public testimony. First one signed up here is Reed Christensen. Mr. Christensen, welcome.
Welcome. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Reed Christensen. I'm the current president of Dallenbaugh Corporation, a local manufacturing company here in Anchorage. I'm also on the board of directors of the Alliance. So today I am testifying on behalf of the Alliance. The Alliance is a nonprofit trade organization made up of more than 500 members, providing more than 50,000 Alaskan jobs related to the oil, gas, and mining industries. Our mission is to advocate for safe, environmentally responsible development of Alaska's oil, gas, and mineral resources for the benefit of all Alaskans. First of all, I want to thank you, the committee and the chair, for your time today, and thank you for all your hard work during this current legislative session. The Alaska business and political climate seems to be a lot like the Alaska weather. If you don't like it, or if you do like it, just wait 5 minutes because it's going to change. Just take a look at the recent flooding of the Dalton Highway, cutting off the only road access to the North Slope. This is an example of part of the natural challenges of doing business in Alaska, our rugged environment, and our remoteness. Most people don't realize the challenges we deal with on a regular basis, and most people also don't realize our resiliency and capacity to rise to the challenge. However, the recent stance by our neighbors in Washington State and recent stance by distant neighbors in Washington, D.C. in regards to responsible development of Alaska's resources are much worse than the flooding of the Dalton Highway. We strongly support this resolution, and we echo the remarks made recently by Mayor Brower of the North Slope in her open letter to Governor Inslee. We agree with her comment that these statements from the current leadership in Washington State and in Seattle, quote, reflect a lack of basic knowledge about our region and are offensive to people who live in America's Arctic, close quote. We would say the same. These comments and actions are offensive to those of us who work in the oil and gas industry of Alaska. We find it hypocritical of so many of our political opponents who claim to be standing up for the environment while they themselves consume the same electricity, heat, and transportation services provided by resource development. People who write ugly letters to the editor about the ills of resource development do so with their electric-powered laptops plugged into outlets on the wall. I think that some of them think that's where electricity comes from, an outlet on the wall in their cannabis cafe. They flood the information highway with an overflow of misinformation, transportation-blocking debris. We need to clear the information highway just as we've cleared the Dalton Highway, so safe, responsible development can continue to flow in both directions. We would rather be flooded with good jobs and opportunity for our children and our communities instead of being flooded with misinformation and continued dependence for oil from countries that really do wreak havoc on the environment. Alaskans are proud stewards of the environment. It is our homeland, and we do not appreciate Washington State or Washington, D.C. blocking the road to our success, indeed the road to our very livelihood. We support the resolution and thank Senator Giesel for having the courage and for taking the time to write it in support of all Alaskans. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Christensen. Any questions for Mr. Christensen?
I'll resist.
Your comment about the
cannabis cafes.
Cannabis cafes was appreciated, Mr. Christensen. Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, second person signed up to testify is Sarah Erkman. Ms. Erkman, welcome.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Chair Giesel, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sarah Erkman, and I am the External Affairs Manager for the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, also called AOGA. AOGA is a professional trade association whose mission it is to foster the long-term viability of the oil and gas industry for the benefit of all Alaskans. Our 14-member companies represent the majority of oil and gas exploration, production, transportation, refining, and marketing activities in Alaska. Our members have been operating in the Arctic for more than 40 years. Oil and gas development is the backbone of Alaska's economy, and as the largest undeveloped energy basin in the United States, the Arctic Outer Continental Shelf, or OCS, is truly the next generation of energy security for our country. The Arctic OCS holds enormous oil and gas resources, estimated by the Department of the Interior at approximately 27 billion barrels of oil and 132 trillion cubic feet of natural gas. In comparison, the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System, or TAPS, has carried just more than 17 billion barrels in over 30 years. At one point, TAPS carried more than 2 million barrels of oil a day, but a decrease in the annual production from legacy onshore fields has resulted in TAPS transporting an average of around 550,000 barrels a day presently. TAPS has played a critical link in the nation's energy security, transporting crude oil from Alaska's North Slope to West Coast markets. OCS development in the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas could feed into TAPS and maintain its viability for years to come. Additionally, oil and gas development in the Arctic OCS means jobs for Alaskans. Development of the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas is predicted to produce an annual average of 35,000 direct and indirect jobs over the next half century for Alaska alone. Those jobs would represent a total payroll of more than $70 billion. When it comes to the Pacific Northwest, Shell's decision to stage its Arctic operation in Seattle in 2012 poured hundreds of millions of dollars into the Seattle economy and employed more than 400 people. Seattle stands to benefit from similar economic benefits in 2015. On a broader scale, the state of Washington and city of Seattle benefit from the development of Alaska's resources via 113,000 jobs for Washington residents and annual business sales to the state of $5 billion. AOGA supports Senate Joint Resolution 18 to support the leases issued to Shell to begin developing this massive economic potential in the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much, Ms. Erkman. Any questions for Ms. Erkman? All right, seeing none. Is there anyone else in the room wishing to testify on Senate Joint Resolution 18? All right, there's no one else online. I'll close public testimony. Any further discussion by committee members? Senator Stedman.
Just a quick comment, Madam Chairman, if I could. It's fairly close to on point, but from what I hear, the state of Washington might be considering doing some kind of a refined products tax on exports next year, something that this committee might want to kind of pay attention to in case the state of Washington wants to give us a gift of a tax in after we send our oil to Cherry Point and other places, and then they want to refine it and ship it back with a added tax on top of it. I think we might have a difference of opinion on that. And if so, I would mention that. So it goes beyond just what they're doing here with Shell.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Senator Stedman. Further comments on the resolution? Senator Michiki.
I appreciate the resolution very much, Madam Chair. The point is not lost, that it just seems like the hypocrisy of some communities. It seems like the more BTUs per capita they use, the more against they are of oil and gas development, which I think is a rather fascinating fact. And I've actually calculated some of those proportions and found it to be true. You know, something we may think about in the future is really encouraging folks that are developing the waters off of Alaska, even if it's in OCS waters, to start a little earlier on to keep their investments here in the state. And I think the more that occurs, the more our infrastructure will be capable of servicing those vessels and assets. So anyway, I very much appreciate this. I'm very supportive.
And I appreciate your remarks, Senator Michiki. Of course, you are now the senator for Seward, and you probably know that the CDQ fleets, at least one of them, is considering home harboring there in Seward. So that's one community that is developing their infrastructure. Certainly Southeast is developing theirs to accommodate this kind of development as well. So I appreciate that. Further comments?
Well, Madam Chair, we
Senator
might be,
Stoltz.
Madam Chair, we might be missing an opportunity. We have a large fishing group. United Fishermen of Alaska have a lot of Seattle-based members. Maybe we can ask them to communicate to their Governor Inslee and the Senators Cantwell and Murray. Just a thought if any of them are out there listening.
Thank you. Any further comments?
Just a comment.
Yes, Senator Coghill.
One of the things that gets lost by many people who live in Seattle, because it's just so common to them, that we struggle with, we're trying to build a infrastructure for power here. They have lived for near a century with the hydro projects that have been put together by the federal government, run by the Corps of Engineers. It has given them 4-cent power that that they lean on, and they quite often are accusing us of leaning on the federal government. And yet the whole industry that they are based on there has been based on what the Corps of Engineers did under a public works project. It just needs to be said out loud somewhere that their benefit has been by the rest of the people of the United States, ourselves included. So Boeing would not have moved there if it hadn't been for the low power, low-cost power. They would have easily been in San Diego or anywhere else except for what that public works project did there nearly a century ago. So it just needs to be said, because we're struggling to develop ours at a cost to both the state and the federal government, and digging deep into our own pockets to have our own hydro units put together up here. So I just wanted it to be said out loud.
That is a very good comment. Senator Stedman.
I'd like to add add a little bit to Senator Coghill's comment, because it goes beyond just the western side of the state of Washington. It goes into the eastern side, where you look at the damming of the rivers for hydro generation, and then the farm belt that sprung up once they had the ability to water the desert. So it has made a big impact on both east and west portions of the state of Washington. So in the event we ever go down that road and mention that formally to either their legislature or city hall in the Seattle area, I'd like to see us with a broader brush and remind them of both development, east and west side of the mountains.
Very good. Further discussion on the resolution. Any closing remarks, Ms. Knorr?
No, Madam Chair.
Senator Costello.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Joint Resolution Number 18 as amended from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying zero fiscal note.
Is there objection? Seeing none, the resolution will move from committee. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the documents. I call Senate Resources Committee back to order. Our next item on the agenda is Senate Bill 50. This will be the fourth time the bill has been taken up by the committee, and we have a proposed committee substitute. Senator Costello.
Madam Chair, I move CS for Senate Bill Number 50, version 29-GS1019/ECHO before the committee as a working document.
Thank you, and I'll object for purposes of discussion. I will invite Ike Gilopsis to the table to explain changes.
Good aggressive.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ike Gilopsis, and I serve as staff to Senator Geisel and the Senate Resources Committee. Madam Chair, before the committee is the proposed working document to Senate Bill 50, Work Order ECHO. And with your permission, I'll briefly go over the proposed changes, answer whatever questions are within my capability to do so.
Great.
Firstly, Madam Chair, in contrast to the existing work order version WSCE, sections 1, 2, 3, 6, and 7 from that version have been removed from that work order that is in this current one. Those sections, Madam Chair, dealt specifically with the two additional components of Senate Bill 50 that did not deal with the Interior Energy Project, namely adjusting for inflation the bonding authorizations for ADA, and secondly, the repealing of existing bond authorizations. And the rationale that the chair has offered is because it's a twofold explanation. Firstly, in the 2+ hours of hearings that this bill has been subjected to, accumulatively 1 to 2 minutes has been spent on those two provisions of the bill. So, though in all likelihood these are good cleanup provisions, the due diligence in the chair's opinion warrants it being put into another bill where it can be vetted. And secondly, it appears that the exigent circumstances of accelerating the Interior Energy Project is requiring a focus on the Interior Energy Project's flexibility in the context of ADA, and thus scaling that bill to that portion. I gave my word, Madam Chair, that we would not put words in the mouth of the second and third portions of these changes, and with the patience of the committee, these address Senator Coghill's installation of new language, and those can be found respectively in a new Section 1 of Version ECHO and a new Section 4 of Version ECHO. And with your permission, Madam Chair, I would defer to Senator Coghill for an explanation.
That would be great. Senator Coghill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the work that you've done on this. And I know this has got another committee yet to go, but Section 1 deals with intent language. With the increased flexibility, we're asking this to focus solely on the advancement of the Interior Energy Project, and it refers to the state law that was put in under 26 SLA. And so to stay consistent with those goals, the second thing we asked for was for them to have an open and competitive solicitation process and to select private entities to participate in this LNG project, both by the way of plant and the affiliated infrastructure. So that's the intent. That would be an uncodified law. Also, in Section 4 in the uncodified law is asking for reports that would require Alaska Industrial Development Authority to submit quarterly reports and have them written to the legislature by way of the chief clerk and secretary, and to the legislature generally, and I'll explain, and actually at the request of LBNA. That would put LBNA the ability for them to come up before them, and these are the four things we're asking to bring: a progress on all the components, a status of the local distribution infrastructure, which I will be continually interested in the build-up. To me, I have a desire for it to happen and questions on how it happens. So I think that's going to be important. And then the up-to-date continual monitoring of conversions or anticipated conversions. I think it'll be important for us to watch that, because that's going to be one of the drivers of the economies of scale. And then the other thing is for them to do a financial accounting of funds expended and in anticipation to be spent with loans and grants and bonds. So, and that would then it would require them to have them available to the LBNA. And then Section 5 says there comes a time when we need to repeal those requirements. This project could go to a go, no-go situation. If it's a go, we don't need the reporting. If it's a no-go, we don't need the reporting. So this just follows it to a conclusion that says, while it's a project in the making, you make the reports. When it's not in the making anymore, no need for the reports.
Senator Coghill, can you elaborate on why 2025 was chosen?
Good question.
I'm actually supposing that this would be first gas from AKLNG.
So but I had my staff do a little research on it so that and I see that she just came up and whispered to Ike. So maybe that could be brought forward, because all I said is there comes a time when these are not going to be reported. I just want that time. So I asked for the time. I didn't know what the date was. Sorry.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, again, for the record, Ike Gilopsis, staff to Senator Giesel. And allow me firstly to apologize, because I had omitted a fourth change, and that was, as Senator Coghill indicated, a new section, Section 5, which is repealer language of the prior Section 4. The reason why June 30th of 2025 was added, Madam Chair, was it was to affirm the project, the Interior Energy Project's trajectory of coinciding with first gas from a major North Slope production line. And so by having that time frame, even if the Interior Energy Project enters into obsolescence earlier, the opinion of the Chair and others was that there would be an ability for a post-mortem on the positive or negative consequences of that policy decision, so that can better inform future aid endeavors as well.
Very good. Thank you.
Thanks for bailing me out, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Senator Coghill. I appreciate your thoughts in the bill. Mr. Terrio and Deputy Commissioner Parity are here, so I would invite them to the table to ask their opinion on the committee substitute work document. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Gene Terrio, Director with the Alaska Energy Authority.
And Madam Chairman, Fred Parity, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. I'll defer to my colleague for a broader comment. The only note I would make is that I appreciate the opportunity to be accountable that's represented in Section 4.
Thank you. And Madam Chairman, we appreciate the opportunity to work with Senator Coghill, his staff, and your committee aide. We understand that you wanted to keep the focus on the IEP project. We believe the reporting and intent in here is reasonable, and appreciate the committee's actions.
Very good. Thank you. Any questions for Deputy Commissioner or Mr. Terrio? All right. Seeing none, thank you. I will remove my objection to adopting the CS. Is there any other further objections? Seeing none, the document is adopted. Public testimony was taken yesterday and closed. Committee discussion. Any comments on the committee substitute?
Go ahead.
Sure.
Yes, Senator Stoltz.
Hope, caution, skepticism. So we'll let it go forward.
All right. Were there any further comments? Senator Coghill.
I'm sure. I know this has been an arduous journey in many ways, because there's a project in the making, and these reporting requirements hopefully will help us stay with a what I consider a bright light on it and some guidelines. But the due diligence both by ADA and by this legislative body, I think, is going to be important as we move through here. So with moving parts, it's always important to have some accountability, and so I think we got enough accountability in here. My guess is that as it moves forward, we'll have to have another discussion on it this next year. So with this, I'm ready to move it forward, because I think the accountability measures are good, but the focus on getting that project is important.
Further comments? I'll just make a few then. Yesterday we heard some great public testimony from folks in Fairbanks. I did receive an email today from one of the gentlemen who testified yesterday, Mr. Merrick, and his concluding sentence was, we need the meter price to be closer to $10 per MMBTU at the meter to work. And this is bar that I have heard cited previously, and actually it's $10 per MMBTU in Anchorage, and so this is a pretty high requirement for this project to pencil out. if that is the expectations in Fairbanks. So I have a bit of concern about that, but the main purpose of this CS was to focus on the interior energy project. I do welcome those bonding changes. They can be in a true cleanup bill in the future, but we do want to get gas, the potential for gas to Fairbanks as soon as possible. And so so that's the reason for the CS. I think it will expedite this process. Just in terms of ADIS process, this committee will be having some interim hearings on other subjects as well, but we'll be watching and wanting to hear the progress. If we find that there are any steps taken by ADA that we believe is distorting the private market, of course, we're going to express significant concern about that. So we will be watching. But we do share Fairbanks' concern about getting lower cost energy and certainly cleaner energy to the interior. So, Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just general comments. You know, I think it's pretty clear that Fairbanks needs some assistance with the air inversion issues and the cost of oil over the last few years. And to the $10 target in Anchorage, I think that would be a nice target across the state. It's about $2 equivalent oil. And if we could deliver that across the state for everybody, it'd be great. I think the market, I guess the lack of totally free markets is given Anchorage a substantial energy cost benefit compared to the rest of the state to price restrictions and incentives and so on and so forth. So I think the level where we can make it across the state for everybody, the better the system is going to be. And I don't think we'll ever get to the point where Iceland is, where everybody pays the same amount for energy and it actually levels out the economic activity around their country, because it doesn't make any difference if you know where you're going to locate it. In Alaska, it makes a significant difference if you locate your business in Anchorage or Fairbanks when it comes to your energy bills, or for that matter, the Southeast, which is kind of in the middle of those two. So I think it's a lofty goal that that fella came back with at $10, and if we can do that around the state, I'd stand up and salute, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. And we certainly have worked hard to provide those hydroelectric projects here in Southeast and allowed or provided significant funding for those. So looking to diversify our economy through economic energy. Senator Michiki.
Just a fun comment, Madam Chair. Perhaps Senator Stedman, when he moves the Shell fleet to Ketchikan, he can negotiate that kind of a deal.
It's an interesting challenge.
That sounds good to me.
Very good. Further comments by committee members?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Stoltz.
I would just like to take a moment, if I might, to commend Senator Coghill. He's kind of the Gunga Din of the Interior Delegation over the years, carries a lot of water and does a lot of heavy lifting and interesting politics up there. I mean, that's the type of borough assembly and mayor's offices that will pass a resolution. They want oil to be $120 a barrel or better and gas under $2 a gallon and expect you to deliver. And he does real well in with those challenging challenging conditions. And he's responsible for a lot of the progress that's been made for the interior. And I just, in the editorials and the blogs, and I don't think people know how much this gentleman does for the interior, and he does it quietly and forcefully, and sometimes he misdirects his force a little bit, but we'll clear that up. But I just want to say, and be informal, John, on behalf of what you do for your community, I wish others had that same, I wish everybody, and we all try, but you really rise to the challenge, and thank you for what you do for your community.
Very kind comments, Madam Chair.
And I think we all agree with that, too, Senator Coghill. Thank you for your work on this. Senator Costello, did I see your hand up?
Pass.
Okay. All right. If there's no further discussion, Senator Costello.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move CS for Senate Bill Number 50, Version 29-GS1019/ECHO from Committee with Individual Recommendations and Attached Fiscal Zero Fiscal Note.
Thank you. If there's no objection, then the work order echo for Senate Bill 50 will move from this committee with individual recommendations. The document is being passed around now for signature, and while that's happening, that does conclude our agenda for today. However, we will be having one more Senate Resources meeting tomorrow afternoon, same time, same place, to take a look, take up an additional bill. So at this time, I will adjourn this committee. The time is 4:16 p.m. Thank you.